This two-part documentary series contains discussions of rape, sexual assault, murder, and other violent and sexually disturbing verbal imagery that may be triggering to listeners. Imagine that a girl or a woman in your life who's dear to you disappears one day to the next. She's last seen by her coworkers waiting at the bus stop for a ride home near an unlit factory waste dump where she spends her days making a living. Nearly a week later, a naked female body is found wrapped in a blanket in the same vicinity. Severe bruises on her neck, savage beatings to her face, mutilated breasts, and signs of forceful sexual penetration mark her body. It tells the horrifying story of the physical and sexual violence that this woman suffered during her captivity. And to boot it, authorities don't even care to identify this body, investigate the case, nor attempt to make the connection between this unidentified body and your loved one's disappearance. This is the story of Lilia Alejandra Garcia Andrade, the 17-year-old daughter of Norma Andrade, who was one of the founders of Nuestras Hijas de Regreso a Casa, an association that works to actively provide justice for mothers and families of the victims of missing and murdered women in Mexico. The story of Lilia is a reality that all women in Mexico are likely threatened to face eventually in their lives, with certain variations in how they are murdered and gone missing, and in who kills them and abducts them. This reality is called femicide, or feminicide, and simply put, it signifies the murdering of a woman by a man, or many men, because she is a woman.
The fact that only one woman, it doesn't have to be 5,000, the fact that only one woman is killed because of her condition of being a woman, and then the government and the state is incapable to give justice to her and to the family, for me, that's an attempt for every woman, for every Mexican woman, as a, you know, as a subject with some rights.
That's Sofia Ramos speaking. She's a student who lived in Mexico until she was 18, and she's done research on feminicides for the Comité des Droits Humains en Amérique Latine in Montreal.
Every killing is an attempt to myself, to my life, and to the life of other women. So I really think that I should do something, not only for them, but for me and for other women.
Sophia's same frustration as a woman reading and listening to these cases in the news over the years is what mainly drove me to create this documentary. And what is more, is that these cases of feminicides are not just confined to Mexico. They've also been taking place here in our backyard, in my home country in Canada, for decades now. The indigenous women and girls of these lands have been going missing and have been murdered at a disproportionate rate, more so than any other woman in Canada. Why are these feminicide cases occurring in both Mexico and in Canada? Why do they continue to occur, and why is there so much impunity surrounding these cases and so little justice for the victims and their families? What can be done to put a stop to them, to help these women live their lives unthreatened and in peace as they should be? And what parallels can be drawn between both the Mexican and Canadian feminicide cases? This two-part documentary series seeks answers to all these questions and more. The first part that you are currently listening to, called Our Lost Sisters in Mexico, deals with the case of missing and murdered women in Mexico, while the second part, called Our Lost Sisters in Canada, deals with the case of missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada in a separate podcast. For the next 30 minutes, you'll be hearing a variety of voices and opinions from students and scholars who have, for the most part, dedicated their lives to the issue of feminicides in Mexico. The words interviews, and production of this two-part documentary series are by Emma Noor Duncan. The ethereal, haunting sounds are by Richard Lacey, and the voice is Emma Noor Duncan. Before we embark on why feminicides are being perpetrated in Mexico, it's very important that we define what feminicides are and what the difference is between femicide and feminicide. So femicide, as I'd said earlier, is the killing of women by men because they are women. But scholars have been increasingly using the term feminicide instead to define these misogynist crimes. Feminicide, or feminicidios, was coined by the feminist Mexican scholar Marcela Lagarde in the 1990s, and the term adds more to our understanding of these cases. Feminicide contextualizes these violent murders in a sociopolitical, economic, and mediatic context, and it emphasizes that these are not isolated murders of women, that the state is complicit in these killings and disappearances, because of its unwillingness to investigate and prevent these cases and to hold the perpetrators accountable. This is obviously the case in both Mexico and in Canada to certain degrees, and for the remainder of the documentary series, I'll be using the term feminicide to define this pandemic in both countries. The first officially recorded case of feminicide in Mexico was made in 1993. But articles in the late 1980s and early 1990s that describe findings of raped and murdered female bodies scattered in public places reveal that feminicides had been occurring much before 1983. Official governmental statistics are highly inadequate and very hard to come by, as you can imagine, but the ones that have been made available by independent organizations over the years reveal that 1,530 women between 1993 and 2014 have been violently killed in Ciudad Juarez. And even more alarmingly so, 1,997 feminicide cases have been recorded in Edomex, the capital of Mexico, between only 2005 and 2011. And these are just the recorded numbers in just a couple of cities. Though feminicides have seemed more particular to certain cities in Mexico, such as Ciudad Juarez and Edomex, they have become more common throughout the state over the years. Women in the state of Mexico are essentially being killed by men at a rate of 6 women every day. Hector Dominguez Rubalcaba, an associate professor at the University of Texas at Austin, who does research on gendered violence in the U.S.-Mexico border, explains who these female victims are.
The common factor on all these victimizations is they're poor, they're unprotected, they're living in areas that security is practically absent, and those areas are under the power of criminals.
To add to this description, these women are mostly of childbearing age, and many of them work for maquiladoras, which are assembly plants that use cheap labor to transform import materials and then re-export the assembled products back to the United States. And while many of these victims are murdered by men unknown to them, meaning by Mexican drug cartels, for example, for the most part, their assailants are somehow related to them. So whether a stranger, a male coworker, a family member, a husband, or even an ex-boyfriend, the male perpetrators don't just murder these women, meaning these aren't your average Joe homicides. These men go out of their way to beat, burn, or vaginally and anally rape these women either before or after they've been killed. For some, they mutilate their breasts and they sometimes even remove them. Why? Why would they go to such pains to destroy these bodies?
For me, it's several things. It's about control. It's about telling women
what they can do and who they belong to. And
that's Alice Driver. She's a freelance writer based in Mexico and the author of More or Less Dead, Feminicide, Haunting, and the Ethics of Representation in Mexico.
It's very much about public space to me. It's like it's sending a message like, I own you, and you should be afraid when you go in public space, and this is what's going to happen to you if you aren't quote-unquote a good woman, or if you don't stay in an abusive relationship. Or I do often think of it in terms of a hate crime, thinking about that these men have such hate, you know, that they feel the need to, it's becomes very clear. I mean, it's so exaggerated, you know, to, like, for example, the victims in Mexico City that I was talking about, they were anally and vaginally raped. You know, why would you do that? What's the, I don't know why people do that to anybody, you know?
These violent markings on the victims' bodies, as Alice said, turned these killings into hate crimes. They translate into pure hatred for the female victim and a desire to have power over the female body and female sexuality. They speak to the wider issue of machismo in Mexico. Machismo loosely translates to male chauvinism, and to many, it's clearly driving these feminicides. This machismo doesn't just stop with the killings, but it continues to plague them much after the deaths of these women. Machismo is apparent when you observe how the local authorities investigate the cases and how the Mexican media reports on the feminicides.
So let's say a mother goes to the police to report, my daughter is missing. The first thing that happens is that the police say, your daughter's probably not missing. She probably just ran away with her boyfriend. You know, or, I don't think she's missing. She might be a prostitute. I mean, it sounds kind of like, you know, she probably just ran off with some guy. So you have a system in which every, you know, at every junction, women are being told, your daughter was a prostitute, you're a bad mother. We're not going to look for her. We're not going to investigate this because it's not even worth investigating.
The Mexican media also tends to victimize the women of these hate crimes. A recent example of this occurred during reportings of the brutal murder of 5 people. One man, a photojournalist named Ruben Espinosa, and 4 women by the names of Nadia Vera, Alejandra Negrete, Yesenia Quiroz, and Mira Virginia Martin, in a single apartment in the Narvarte neighborhood of Mexico City in late July of this year. The women in particular were found naked, sexually assaulted, and murdered by men with guns. At first, only the name of Ruben Espinosa and cries for freedom of speech and press for journalists could be heard in the media. Mexican authorities withheld from identifying the women, and news headlines in El Diario Interamérica, for example, were plastered with descriptions of the women partying, which was soon retracted by Mexican authorities. Not only was the media insinuating that these women were quote-unquote fallen women, but it was also accusing one of the 4 women, Mile Virginia Martin, who is Colombian, of being a model, prostitute, and of even being associated to drug cartels. No evidence backed up the media's assertions. This was all just hearsay. Candace Shaw, a sociology PhD candidate at McGill University, who's done research on domestic violence and migration in the Mexican context, shared how these media tactics are used to make women in Mexico responsible for their own deaths.
In a way, it's a way of taking away the systemic source of the issue. I mean, in Mexico, if we look at it, there have been a number of changes happening economically and socially that have been happening at the macro level, but have certainly had an impact on the micro level as well. And a lot of the people, such as members of the media, community alike, even police and government officials, have tried to categorize women as good girls, or trying to have them fit this archetype of daughters or fallen women. And so they tend to look at, you know, what were some of the falling outs of these women, kind of to to look at almost placing the blame on the victim herself as opposed to questioning the larger social organization.
To sum up then, claiming that the victims of feminicides are sex workers or questioning what they were wearing at night and why they were out so late alone, well, it's a way of downplaying these crimes and making it seem as though these women brought these crimes upon themselves. It gives the authorities and the state an excuse to not try the perpetrators or, at the very least, not even look into these cases in depth. The dysfunctional justice system, the unacceptable response by police and the state, this impunity lets other potential perpetrators know that they too can do the same to other women and get away with it. And it sure does not help that the police and the government are oftentimes the perpetrators of these feminicides themselves. Hector elaborated on this point.
Let me tell you, there are many, many cases where we can find police as perpetrator. The police is criminal in many cases. And the police in Ciudad Juarez, the police in the state of Mexico, the two most problematic areas for feminicide, are also accused of being very corrupted by the criminal organizations, and also are accused of kidnapping women for the criminals.
Really?
That appeared actually in one of the witness that came with this recent case that has been in court in the state of Chihuahua, the case of Arroyo El Navajo, where about 11 women were found. And so I will say then that the activity of the government has been like administrating the impunity since a long time before. And this administration of the impunity not only consists of having these poor investigations or disappearing some evidences or confusing the case with a lot of information to blur the interpretation of the cases, but also giving or promoting some kind of campaigns against people who investigate these cases, and even criminalizing journalists like Diana Washington from El Paso Times or González Rodríguez from the newspaper Reforma. So the machinery of impunity works inside the juridical system, but also in the media, but also in the academic sphere everywhere, with the objective of protecting these criminals. So we need to address this issue of how the Mexican state is constructing the impunity with a great diversity of resources they have.
When a machista culture that tells women their lives aren't worth anything is so deeply ingrained and institutionalized in a society, when the state, the police, and the justice system are all so corrupt, negligent, and complicit in these women's deaths, what can be done for the families of the victims, for the women themselves who, for the most part, have not seen justice till this day? Sophia, the Mexican student you heard at the beginning of this documentary, had a few ideas in mind.
Well, I think that first, people need to admit that, yes, there is a problem, and yes, and I think it's just it's a matter of education, just realizing that that there is this weird hierarchy with gender, and that is a very socially constructed. For me, through that through the education could work. But I think that the most urgent action is justice. Like, we need justice. We need that these killings, these crimes are resolved. Because if not, you're just nurturing this culture of impunity. Like, oh, I can kill a woman and nothing is going to happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I already killed two women and nothing happened to me, so I can just reproduce this violence, you know? Because I think that there are a lot of femicides that are killed by their, mostly by their lovers, their husbands. So it's like this, conjugal violence that is repeated over and over, and the children see, so they repeat this, these patterns. So I think that impunity is, triggering these patterns, because there is no consequence if you kill a woman and you have seen this your whole life and you have done it and nothing happens, so it can just continue. I think impunity needs to be stopped. I think we need justice, you know, that the responsibles are in jail. That's what we need.
Sophia also admitted that Mexico needs to build a citizen culture around respect for women's bodies and their sexuality.
I mean, things you do when you how you behave when you're in the street. Like, for example, as a woman in Mexico, when you go in the street and you're alone, that you're not with a man, people scream some things to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, people get I don't know, I used to be okay, it's normal, everyone does that. But then when I went to France or to other countries, but that happens more rarely, and actually women get offended, I realized that, that is not normal. So it's just trying to change the way you behave in public, respect not only women, but respect your neighbors, the other citizens around the same city. That's what I think is lacking in Mexico. I think we can blame the government about a lot of things, but I think that yes, we need to to have some education about citizen culture. That's what I think.
Hector, on the other hand, called the international community to arms, emphasizing that it is everyone's responsibility and not just Mexico's.
I think the main activity we need is to publicize this, to let people know something great is happening to women in Mexico. And that would the international community. And when I talk about international community, I'm talking about media, I'm talking about artists, I'm talking about activists, and I'm talking about politicians, all people that participate in the public sphere, international level, can help a lot trying to disseminating, is the best word, disseminating the problem of Mexico. When we talk about Mexico, we talk about one of the main economic partners of the United States. But we have to be very conscious that being an economic partner of the United States for Mexico means also sacrificing their women. You know, one of the main participations of this North American economy by Mexico is the workforce. The workforce that is building computers or assembling all kinds of goods we use in our daily life, that force is receiving a very poor salary daily for us to be, you know, the beneficiaries of this very exploitative economy. So we are in many ways the beneficiaries of the work of these women that have been killed in Mexico. In that way, we are involved in this problem. We have the moral commitment of protecting these women, because these women are working for us. These women are part of our economy. It's the very basic part of our economy. We have a moral commitment with them. We need to really, if we are human beings with some sense of humanity, we need to be concerned about their lives, because their lives are very, very involved into our lives. What I always say is what we need now in this moment is a very radical ethical action. Because we are in this, with this system, this economic system of over exploitation, we are part of the perpetrators. We are killing women in some indirect way. So we have to be involved. That's what I would say to the audience.
For the families of the missing and murdered women in Mexico, silence over the cases of their grandmothers, mothers, and daughters still reigns, and the death and disappearance of women still remains. The uncertainty of whether their loved ones are forever lost is agonizing, and there will be no hope for closure until they recover their bodies and offer them proper burial services. Justice for these families seems far in the minds of Mexican authorities and the government itself. But it is attainable if we all partake in seeking justice for these women and girls as a single international community. For all of you listeners out there, you can head to soundcloud.com/ourlostsisters to hear their words and to listen to this podcast series to find out how you can get involved in providing justice for these women. Next time, we'll be exploring how the Mexican feminicides compare to the ones in Canada. But for now, just imagine that a girl or a woman in your life who's dear to you disappears one day to the next. How would that make you feel?